Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. With all the flooding we have seen this year, has water quality been affected? To help us answer that question and much more, John McMain is with us. He's an assistant professor at SDSU and Extension Water Management Engineer. He's joining us from the Janine Basinger Studio at the South Dakota State University. John McMain, thank you for being here. We appreciate your time.
Appreciate the opportunity to be on, Lori.
So we had an incredibly wet spring, and then here we are in September with a lot of flooding happening in various regions of the state. Tell me how, you know, we think about the road closures, we think about just surviving a disaster and recovering. Let's talk about some of the less thought about impacts of flooding. Where do you want to begin today?
Yeah, well, the biggest thing about flooding, I mean, in a lot of ways it's a natural process, but it's whenever it comes in contact with things that are related to civilization, it's when it becomes a problem. And so, and that's both, that's from contaminants that could be introduced into the environment, or it can also, like if a flood happens naturally and there's no infrastructure there to be impacted, then, you know, there's not a huge amount of issues. Flooding has been happening since the dawn of time. Erosion has been happening since the dawn of time. But then it's whenever those floods impact livelihoods is when we need to respond or be proactive about how we address those things.
All right, let's talk about contaminants. So there's a whole lot that's in that water as it floods. What are we looking for? What are we worried about?
Yeah, so one of the biggest things that we first think about is sediment. And so that's from either erosion from stream banks or stream beds. And again, I mean, erosion is, and it's a natural process. I mean, we look at the Grand Canyon, we look at the Badlands. So erosion is going to happen, but it's the impacts of that erosion that we start to worry about. And one of them is just the sediment that is carried. And so you have increased amounts of sediment, but then many times there's things that are bound to that sediment. So that could be different chemical compounds, it could be bacteria. And so that not only is the sediment being transported, but anything that's bound to that sediment is also being transported. And one example of this is my colleague, Dr. Rachel McDaniel, in the Ag and Biosystems Engineering Department here at SDSU. She studies resuspension of bacteria during flood events like this. And so basically the bacteria, E. coli, for example, can grow on a stream bed, but it's really not in contact with anyone, so it's not a big issue. But then when you have a significant flooding event, then all of that sediment is resuspended and all of that bacteria is again in the water column, and then you can potentially have issues related to that.
So the things then, as I understand, when we've talked about water quality in South Dakota before, for example, efforts for, you know, buffer strips and cattle management and, you know, what you're putting on your lawn for chemicals if you live in an urban area, all those things that we've discussed before about that impact our water quality, just, multiply that by the size of the flooding. Am I kind of on the right track there?
Yeah, that's pretty much on the right track. And the other thing that we can have, because flooding can impact infrastructure, if it overwhelms infrastructure, then whatever was being dealt with in a safe way is now has the potential to be unsafe. So, for example, a wastewater treatment plant or a manure lagoon or holding area, those are designed to be able to withstand certain flooding events, and that's, you know, that's in regulation and everything else. But if we have just an abnormal flooding event, then there's potential that those could be impacted. And so now, for example, you have you could have a river encroaching on a wastewater treatment plant, for example, and then obviously that's going to be a big issue if that fails.
And so we saw this in the city of Sioux Falls in spring, and then this fall, at least in the city of Del Rapids, perhaps others, where the mayor was talking, you know, don't use you know, don't do your laundry right now. Don't minimize your usage. Explain to me how that works. And if people didn't listen to that and people kept using, you know, their domestic, you know, in their house, you know, sewage system and doing their laundry, what happens then?
Yeah, so essentially it's just trying to lessen the load on the system. So the system is designed to handle a certain amount of municipal wastewater typically. And whenever we have a flood event, then excess water can get into the municipal wastewater system. And so whenever that happens, not that the water is necessarily dirtier that gets into the wastewater treatment system, but now it just has to be treated. And so essentially in that case, it's overwhelming the system. And so then you have recommendations to try to reduce your use until that water has gone all the way through the system. That's again, just to kind of lessen the load on the treatment system.
Yeah. What about people who live in rural areas or, you know, living off of wells, or how are some of the things that you can prepare for flooding and then deal with it as it happens in your own, your own systems, and then clean up afterwards?
Yeah, so that can be really tricky because you don't have a built-in treatment system typically if you're on a well, and so you're relying on that well being good clean water. And so if something happens to that well, let's say a flood overtops the well and then you have flood water in the well, then there's potential that now that water is no longer clean and safe and you don't have a built-in system to treat that. And so in those types of cases, we recommend getting the well tested and getting it tested for E. coli or different bacteria contaminants. And those test kits are available at your local extension office or your 4-H office. And then those can be sent to the state health lab to get that tested. And then if there is a contamination from bacteria, then we recommend shocking the system with bleach. And that's just to kill that bacteria so no one gets sick from drinking the well water.
Let's talk a little bit about what's happening in a city, in an urban area, versus what's happening in a rural area, just in general with the water cycle and how it's sort of impacting rivers and streams. What's the difference?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Lori. And that's probably something that a lot of people don't think about, even though they see it anytime it rains. So if you think about what can happen to the water whenever it hits the ground, there's essentially three things. One, it can run off, and so that's what we see in big floods. We see water running off of surfaces. The other thing is it can infiltrate. It can percolate down into the ground. And the third is it can be taken back up into the atmosphere as evaporation, or we usually couple transpiration, which is what plants use, into evapotranspiration. Again, it's either going off the surface, it's going down into the ground, or it's going back up into the atmosphere. And when we think about urbanization or development, we introduce a lot of impermeable or impervious surfaces into the system. And so this could be roads, it could be roofs, sidewalks, really anything that water can't penetrate into. And so you think about the change in hydrology that brings about. So let's say if you had 50 to 60% infiltration in a pasture or a meadow, whenever you have an impermeable surface, then most of that becomes runoff. And so whenever you have a city, you transition from a run or a infiltration dominated system to a runoff dominated system. And so as you can imagine, this increases the volume or the amount of water that's going into streams. It increases the speed at which it gets there. So we have a lot more energy in the water. So that increases the potential for erosion. And so that's one of the things that when we look at urban areas, we have to address and deal with. So we don't end up with excessive stream bank erosion, excessive flooding, things like that.
Is that a matter of urban planning and adding green spaces? Is it a matter of infrastructure?
So it's a combination of both. So kind of the conventional way to manage that was through storm sewers and detention basins. And so those are important tools, because they kind of help reduce localized flooding by getting it away, getting water away from the area. But you're not reducing the total volume of water going downstream. And so we're looking at different ways to manage that water on site. So trying to get back to that pre-development hydrology. And so this, I guess, paradigm of thinking is called green infrastructure, green stormwater infrastructure, or low impact development. And this includes things like rain gardens or bioretention cells, rainwater harvesting, permeable pavements, all practices that keep the water on site, manage it on site versus sending it downstream.
What's a rain garden?
Yeah, so rain garden is a really simple concept. It's just a shallow depression in the landscape that you route water from any impermeable surface. So for example, at a home, you would route roof runoff into this shallow depression, and then the water just ponds there for 24 hours or so, and then it infiltrates down into the ground. And so by doing this, you're taking all of that runoff that would have just been, you know, essentially 100% runoff, and making it closer to that pre-development hydrology or more infiltration-dominated system.
Right. Are these things that we knew and really haven't incorporated in planning our communities and our urban areas? Is this new technology, new understandings of what's possible? How do you see the science changing, or is it just people are paying more attention to it because they have to?
I think it's both. And so the low impact development or green infrastructure concepts, they kind of started in the early 90s in Maryland. And since then, they've been pretty much on the coasts and not as much on kind of the Midwest, the central part of the country. But we also we lack a lot of research in how we can design and build these systems in, for example, cold climates or in climates that have more extreme events versus more smaller storms that happen more frequently. So we can experience some pretty intense storms. And so the way we design green infrastructure in that situation may be different than how we would design it, say, in a coastal system, not counting for hurricanes, of course, but a coastal system that would have more frequent, maybe smaller events.
All right. So as we look at South Dakota and we see cities like Madison, who has done a lot of work trying to figure out how to improve how the community responds to a flood and dealing with floodplains, and then the city like Mitchell was really overwhelmed by the amount of precipitation that they had all at once. Talk a little bit about what's happening in those types of situations and why it's such a problem.
Yeah, and so this year is really it's a hard situation to even think about how to deal with. And part of the problem, so in the spring, and this has been talked about before, but the situation was that the soil was full of water, it was saturated, and it was frozen in many cases, and so the water really had nowhere to go but off the surface. And then again, recently, a lot of soils are still saturated, or at least have pretty high soil moisture. And so if we think about it from a whole system perspective, a lot of times this water just hasn't had anywhere to go. And so if we think about our kind of major river basins, the Jim River and the Big Sioux River and Missouri River, those are all at pretty high levels already. And so if we go upstream from that, kind of more local or in municipalities, the smaller streams that are feeding into those big streams, they're not going to go down as quickly because there's just not a lot of space for that to go to. And then if we think about the soils, which many times is a huge storage space for water, if those are already saturated, then you're going to see excess flooding. Recently, the recent flood, that's partly due to that, and it's partly just due to intensity. And so intensity and amount, it takes time for that water to get away from an area. And so when you have that much in that short a time, it unfortunately leads to some pretty bad infrastructure damage.
What needs to happen, you know, as people look at, is this an anomaly? Is it just something that happened, you know, it's going to be, hey, 2019 was a tough year? Or is it time to really seriously think about how the climate's changed or the variabilities in climate in intensity of things that we can expect in the future? How do you sort of see that planning conversations? Because these are investments that need to be made that have an expense attached to it.
Absolutely. Yeah, these have huge capital investment perspectives. And so 2019 was an exceptional year, but I think we're going to continue to see this moving forward. There was an analysis done by Dr. Chris Hay and Dr. Dennis Toddy, who, when they were at South Dakota State University, this was published in 2011. And essentially they saw in the 20 years prior to that, they'd seen increases in precipitation from anywhere from 10 to 50% across different areas of South Dakota, North Dakota, Minnesota, and Iowa. And the other aspect of that is they're seeing it more in kind of the shoulder seasons. So times of the year when not a lot of water is being used. And so if we think about that, the three parts, that evapotranspiration part, evapotranspiration is really high in summer, but a lot of our water is now coming more in fall and winter, obviously in the form of snow in wintertime, but when it's not being used. And so then the only option it has is to either run off or infiltrate. And once that soil is saturated, then we have a lot of runoff.
Yeah. What are you hearing from farmers and people in the ag industry about the challenges this year? And what sort of, you know, what sort of solutions are they looking at for the future?
Yeah, it's been a tough year. And there's been a lot of hard to hear conversations with producers from all over eastern South Dakota. And a lot of it is, there is an understanding that precipitation patterns are changing. And so they are looking at how to manage those changes in precipitation. And one way, I guess, would be people are looking at infrastructure. So that would be something like tile drainage. But then people are also just looking at their soils and their management practices. So I talked a little bit about stream bank erosion, but people also are very cognizant of the fact that there can be infield erosion. And so the more runoff you have, the more likelihood that you're going to have infield erosion. And so they're looking at how they manage their soils. Soil health is a big push, and a lot of that is related to water, how water is being managed on the landscape. And so I think people are understanding this has real impacts to their livelihood and looking at solutions to address that.
Hmm. All right. Well, we hope to talk to you again in the future. It's a fascinating conversation that often goes overlooked until it's a problem. So, John McMain, thank you so much for being here with us today. We appreciate your time.
I appreciate the opportunity to be on, Lori.